AFTN Fast Break Podcast, Monday, December 2nd, 2024, episode 26. What is going on, everybody? Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kawisenberg, DFS, joined on this Monday, not by Mike Randall, but it's Adam Pfeiffer, the Fife Dog, filling in here on a Monday. Adam, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was good, man. Hopefully yours was good. Everybody else had a good holiday. We talked about it. I didn't, happen to watch the Cavs play during that week, so that was fun, I guess. But no, it was good. It's always a good time. Tired. Today's Monday, and I'm going to think it's Thursday for the rest of the day, so that's great. But I'm good.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Yeah, it was a good Thanksgiving on my end as well. An exciting week of NBA basketball since we last convened. Of course, we took the holiday off, so it has been a full week since we had our last episode of the Fast Break. So what I want to do today, Adam, because we are on the precipice of the conclusion of the group stage in the NBA Cup this year. We, of course, had 2 days of group stage games between this episode and our last. So I want to spend today just going through the results from last week and what that has set us up for in terms of clinching scenarios and overall entertainment tomorrow night. So let's go back all the way to last Tuesday. It was a smaller slate last Tuesday. I want to say it was only 5 group stage games on that night. Yeah, it was just 5 games. Then we had the large Friday slate, but we had some very important results from that Tuesday slate. First, the Bulls beat the Wizards, which set up a showdown between Boston and the Bulls on Friday. Elsewhere in the East, in East Group B, the Bucks beat the Heat, so they moved to 3-0 in East Group B. And out West, Houston beats Minnesota in overtime. That was a great game, just from in a vacuum. But what that also did was clinch West Group A for the Rockets. So the Rockets are the second team into the knockout rounds, joining the Golden State Warriors. And then in West Group B, the Spurs beat the Jazz, and the Suns beat the Lakers to make things a little bit interesting. So we moved to Friday's big slate. I want to say we had 10 games on Friday. In the East, the Knicks beat the Hornets, and the Magic beat the Nets to set up what, for all intents and purposes, Adam, is a final on Tuesday between undefeated New York and undefeated Orlando, both teams 3-0 there in East Group A. So that is a very, like, as we work in our clinching scenarios on Tuesday into this conversation, that is very cut and dry. Knicks clinch a spot in the knockout with a win. Orlando clinches a spot in the knockout with a win. The Knicks apparently cannot clinch a wild card spot. I'm not sure how that works, but it says here on our official NBA Cup clinching scenario sheet that Orlando can also clinch the wild card spot in the East by winning the tiebreaker over Boston and the loser of the Milwaukee-Detroit game. But for Orlando to have a chance to win the tiebreakers at 3-1, they must lose by no more than 37 points or in overtime, because if you go to overtime, you just get that zero. You get the score from regulation in terms of your point differential. So in East Group A, I mean, this is like, to me, this is like the coolest part of the group stage. We get down to the end where it's like a win or go home scenario before we even get to the knockout rounds.
Yeah, and some of the teams that we've talked about, earlier, a few weeks back about some potential concerns with New York and what they've done defensively, or I guess haven't done defensively, but it's kind of made up for it with how good Cat has been offensively. And Orlando, we've talked about them a lot, just what they continue to do without Paolo. And I think we're doing like midseason awards on Thursday, but
yeah,
with Orlando, it's like if you're making the 5 starters for the All-Star game in the East, I don't know how Franz isn't on that list with what he's doing. So yeah, these games are exciting. And even though the Cavs didn't get the job done, like, I'm still kind of excited for these games because, like, it's not these teams. Like, we talked about it when we previewed it about who we predicted to come out of these groups, and there really weren't many groups where it's like, okay, this is the clear cut and dry team that we think will come out of it. So it'll be fun to watch play out.
Yeah, that one in the Garden, and that is the early game in the TNT doubleheader on Tuesday. So, of course, New York and Orlando, one that we will all be watching. So also on Friday, you get the Pistons taking down the Pacers, which I mentioned Milwaukee last Tuesday moved to 3-0. So that puts the young Pistons at 3-0 in East Group B, setting up another final win and get in. So Detroit will clinch a spot in the knockout with a win. Of course, the Bucks can do the same. The Pistons can clinch the wild card spot by winning the tiebreaker over the Celtics and the loser of the Magic and Knicks game. So for Detroit to have a chance to win the tiebreakers at 3-1, the Pistons must lose by no more than 5 points or in overtime. And so on the Bucks side, similar thing, the Bucks must lose by no more than 6 points or in overtime to keep their chances at a wild card spot alive in the event of a loss. So again, just right off the rip here, this game actually tips off right at 7. So you will have East Group B decided before East Group A. But these are the two games to, if you have only two screens, these are the first two games on your screens on Tuesday night to, not necessarily win or go homes, but win or get in for both games. So who do you think takes it between Detroit and Milwaukee? The Bucks on a 6-game win streak.
Yeah, that's what I was going to lead with, playing better. We're seeing slowly but surely a little bit more of a, I guess, continuity and flow with Dame and Giannis in terms of screens and rolling. I do think it's great for the Pistons. Again, I know it's not the playoffs, and I know it's still technically a regular season game, but to get this kind of atmosphere for them, just for the young team that they have, it's good for them. I would not be surprised, especially with overall in the grand scheme of things this season, how Milwaukee's looked if Detroit wins this game. But with Milwaukee playing the best basketball they have all season, Giannis is still playing MVP-level basketball. It's just Their record, obviously, off to a slow start. But give me Milwaukee, but I think it's going to be a really close game. Like Detroit, I've talked about Detroit. Defensively, they're way more engaged this season than they have been. Their young players are playing well, which isn't much of a surprise because they're still really talented. Mm-hmm. And the pieces they added gives them a little bit more shooting. So I think it'll be close, but I'm going to go Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'm going to lean towards Detroit here. I do think This is going to be a very competitive game. And it's only a lean for me, Adam, because like you said, like the best player on the court plays for the Bucks. But I'm very interested to see, right, Can Detroit, who they were, during that like record losing streak last year, they were in some very close competitive games, and that crowd in Detroit can get a little bit crazy, even with the low expectations surrounding this team. So I do think that they're going to have a good home crowd here. I will pick Detroit, and we didn't pick for New York and Orlando, but I've got the Knicks at home there. I think that will be a pretty I think they can win that one handily with the injury to Paolo Banchero on the other side. As good as the Magic have been, right, they have also won 6 in a row, of course, all without Paolo. But I think that streak comes to an end in the Garden.
I'm going to go Orlando. I like how their front court's been playing. Wendell Carter Jr. is still not playing a massive role, but Goga's been really good for them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Franz is playing all-star level basketball. Jalen Suggs is, he had 31 the other day. He's starting to give you some nice scoring games. I think the questions have been answered to an extent about what Orlando would do offensively without Paolo. It's not as pretty, but their offense can be good enough. And New York's defense, I still don't trust right now. So, again, close game, but I'll take the road team here.
All right. So we are split on our first two picks here. I like it. And certainly, we could dive into the, for lack of a better term, some of the turmoil around the Knicks and Mikal Bridges over the last week, but we'll keep our focus here on the Cup. And so moving to East Group C, which we know, right, Celtics and Cavs and the upstart Hawks. The Hawks defeat your Cleveland Cavaliers, Adam, and they actually did so twice in the last week. Second time in as many games.
I had a great Thanksgiving.
Boston, yeah. But then Boston narrowly escapes Chicago in Chicago on Friday. That was a pretty fun game to watch all the way through the final buzzer. So that means the Atlanta Hawks clinch East Group C. So they have a spot in the knockout rounds out East, while the Celtics are alive for a wild card spot. And you take a look at Tuesday night's schedule. Boston, not on the schedule here. They are already 3-1. So to clinch a wild card spot, Boston, just watching the action on Tuesday night, needs a Knicks loss plus to win the tiebreaker over the loser of Bucks and Pistons. And they can also clinch a wild card spot if they win the tiebreaker over the Magic and over the loser of Bucks and Pistons. And for Boston to have a chance, Orlando must lose by at least 37 points in regulation, or the Detroit Pistons must lose by at least 5 points, or Milwaukee must lose by at least 6. So that is your Eastern Conference scenario. One of the Knicks and the Magic will be in, one of the Pistons and the Bucks will be in, and the three teams alive for the wild card, the loser of Pistons and Bucks, and then Orlando, if they lose, in the mix with Boston. So those three teams would be the ones to be, that we'd be watching the standings, would be watching the ends of these games as, you know, pushing it to the full 48 minutes for the point differential. That's not going to happen in every game on Tuesday because, again, a number of the teams playing their final group stage game are just playing out the string here. Still a regular season game that counts towards the standings, but you won't see that point differential incentive kick in for all the games. So those are the three games you'll have your eyes on, or the two games, and then watching the standings with Boston out East. Anything else for you on the Eastern Conference for Tuesday night, Adam?
No, again, I just think kind of – alluding to, not alluding to, but going back to with the Atlanta Hawks, we talked mm-hmm. about them, like they're still a middle of the pack team record wise, but this is going to be a team that, look, they're going to be able to score with pretty much everybody. And DeAndre Hunter's been back. He's been playing good basketball. He was really good against Cleveland.
Yeah.
And yeah, Boston, like, I think we ended up with Boston as a team we like the best out of this group just because the value was there for them because right. Cleveland was the favorite and we still thought Boston was the best team. And yeah, I mean, they'll probably be looking pretty good here. But I think the cup has been really fun for the league in general though, because it's just, it gives, obviously there's the incentive there with the added money, but it just gives these young teams that probably don't make the playoffs a playoff like atmosphere. So it's fun to see, you know, Cade Cunningham in a game that's got a playoff atmosphere where he hasn't even come close to that to start his career.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, obviously the Magic got their taste of postseason action last year, but that one being in the Garden, like
mm-hmm.
pretty much all 41 regular season games are a good environment, fan environment there at Madison Square Garden. But for this one, the win and get in for the knockout rounds, like the Knicks fans are going to be champing at the bit to take down this NBA Cup title, right, and hang that little, the smaller banner maybe to some of their championship banner from what, 50 years ago now. So like that, I don't begrudge.
Can you imagine though, like that team of all teams winning the NBA Cup and giving the money to all of the bench players who don't ever play and won't play in this game because it's a Tibbs right. rotation? So it's just like thanks guys, like thanks to the starters for playing 40 minutes again. But but yeah, I'm going to Orlando. I like the contributions they've gotten from Goga. They have Wendell mm-hmm. Carter back. The Silva's been pretty good for them. I like Orlando here. And super fast forward, I hope we don't play. I hope the Cavs don't play them in the playoffs again, because with Paolo there, I don't want to play them.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be a tough go for any team matched up against the Magic. I think once we get maybe like down to the Final Four, in about a week and a half's time, Adam, maybe we go through some of these rosters and think about some of the, like, call out the players who can use this $500,000 the most, right? Like, yeah, like a Jacob Toppin, right? Maybe he doesn't qualify because his brother, right, has had his
Mac McClung's on Orlando, right?
Yeah, Mac McClung is there on a two-way. To be honest, I don't know if the two-way guy.
That's what I was wondering.
Get the prize money or not? But you know, Cameron Payne. Trying to think of other guys on this Knicks bench who just don't play. I mean, Tyler Kolek coming in as a rookie, right? How about Mitchell Robinson? Not even playing, right?
But actually, Jaden Springer in Boston.
Right, there you go. So we can go through again. We can go through all these.
We could do. We could do a draft.
Right? Yeah. Actually, let's do that next week. We'll draft from the knockout teams, the 8 teams that are in the knockout. Who can use the $500,000 the most?
This is going to be the one draft where you just don't even care if you have the first pick.
Yes. Oh man! All right. Well, I'm excited for that now. All right. So let's talk about the West. So on Friday, we had Oklahoma City defeating the Lakers, which just on the surface from that one game, Lakers 2-2, Lakers are out. So we will not have a repeat champion in the second edition of the NBA Cup. But this also sets up a complicated scenario, Adam, in West Group B. So we will get tomorrow night, we will have Oklahoma City taking on Utah. And we will have the Spurs taking on the Suns. The OKC game, they will host the Jazz. That is at 8 p.m. Eastern. And then the Suns will host the Spurs. That is at 9 p.m. Eastern. So Oklahoma City, very simple for them. They can win the group with a win over Utah and a San Antonio loss. The Thunder can clinch the wild card spot with a win, a Portland loss, and Portland will play the Clippers, and a Dallas loss. And Dallas will host the Grizzlies. Okay, so they can also win if they win the tiebreaker, or they can clinch the wild card spot, rather, with a win and winning the tiebreaker over Portland and Dallas. So they don't necessarily need those teams to lose, but then you'd be taking a look at point differential. They can also clinch a wild card spot if the Spurs beat the Suns, Portland and Dallas both lose, and Oklahoma City winning the tiebreaker over the second-place teams in West Groups A and C. They can also clinch the wildcard spot with a Portland, a Dallas, or Portland loss, a Dallas loss, and winning OKC winning a tiebreaker over the Spurs and the Lakers in their own group, and then the tiebreaker over the second-place teams in West Groups A and C. And in order for OKC to qualify, to have a chance to win the tiebreaker over the second-place teams, OKC must lose in overtime if Denver wins, and by fewer than 24 points or in overtime if Denver loses. So that's not complicated at all.
No, I just imagine somebody not even knowing about the NBA Cup until this year and then having to go through that scenario you just laid out.
Yeah, so but very cut and dry, right? You win and San Antonio loses, you win the group, you are through. So let's talk about San Antonio and Phoenix. Again, Phoenix hosting.
I thought you were going to pause and just end the sentence after, let's talk about San Antonio.
Yeah, well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time here on the Fast Break. But from the Phoenix side of things, they clinch the group and advance with a win and an Oklahoma City loss. Then Phoenix can clinch the wild card spot with a win, a Portland loss, and a Dallas loss. So a similar scenario to how OKC can clinch the wild card as well. They can also clinch the wild card with a win and winning the tiebreaker over Portland and Dallas. So, of course, going to that point differential tiebreaker. And then the San Antonio side of things, they clinch the group with a win. So contrary to Phoenix and Oklahoma City, the other 2-1 teams in this group, San Antonio is out in front right now on tiebreakers. So win and in. Don't need any other help, do the Spurs. They can also clinch the wild card spot. A little bit more complicated for them compared to OKC and Phoenix. They need a Portland loss, a Thunder loss, a Dallas loss, a Denver loss, and then to win the tiebreaker over the Thunder and Lakers in their own group and over the second place teams in West Groups A and C. And in order to have a chance to win the tiebreaker over those second place teams, they must lose by fewer than 20 points to the Suns or in overtime. Again, Phoenix and San Antonio is a win and get in for the Spurs. If Phoenix wins and the Thunder lose, Phoenix wins the group. If OKC wins and Phoenix wins, then OKC wins the group. And of course, then we're going down through the tie-breaking scenario. So photo finish set up here in West Group B. And then to close it out, Adam, in West Group C, we know that Golden State has clinched. Dallas currently leads the way in the West wildcard race. They play Memphis. Technically, Memphis is not eliminated. So you have clinching scenarios for Dallas, for Denver, and for Memphis in terms of this wild card spot. Dallas clinches the wild card with a win, a Thunder loss, and a Portland loss, or a win and winning the tiebreaker over Portland and the second place team in West Group B, or a Thunder loss, a Blazers loss, a Denver win, and Dallas winning the tiebreaker over Denver and Memphis in their own group, and then against the second place teams in West Groups A and B, and Dallas to have a chance to win the tiebreaker. They must lose by fewer than 24 points or in overtime. Real quick, Denver to clinch, they need a win, a Dallas loss, a Thunder loss, a Blazers loss, and then to win the tiebreaker over the Mavs and the Grizzlies and the second place teams from the other two groups. And they must win by at least 16 points in regulation. Tomorrow, Denver hosts the Golden State Warriors. That is the second game of the TNT doubleheader, 10 p.m. Eastern. Of course, Warriors already clinched. They're already through. But this is a regular season game, so they will still be going after it. And Memphis, they need a win, a Thunder loss, a Blazers loss, a Nuggets loss, and to win the tiebreaker over the second-place teams in the other two groups. And they must win by at least 24 points over the Mavericks in Dallas tomorrow. So probably not, but we'll see. All three of those teams still alive for the wild card in West Group C. So a lot of me talking, a lot of Adam nodding along. Let's go back to West Group B. What do you think happens here between the Spurs and the Suns? This one is in Phoenix.
Durant Wemby. That's going to be Bradley Beal's day-to-day, I believe, right?
Correct. He's been in and out.
Yeah. So that's obviously impactful. Spurs, what, 7-3 over the last 10?
Yeah.
Averaging like 115 per game. Wemby's been, I don't know, unstoppable. Is that the word to describe him? Yeah,
another triple-double last night.
Yeah, and I think we're slowly starting to see him. The concern I've really only had of him starting to attack these mismatches in the post more. He's still taking those threes from, you know, right around flirting with half court, but
yeah.
We talked about, I think the last time we were on the pod, we talked about how much I like Stephon Castle, and he continues to play well for them. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul is always going to give you that stability. This game in San Antonio?
In Phoenix.
Maybe, I have no reason to suck up to you, but I'm going to San Antonio here. I just think the most unstoppable player on the floor plays for San Antonio, and that's saying something when Kevin Durant's on the other side. I just think that's where we're at their stage of their career. And it's not even just that. Like, the secondary pieces from San Antonio have all been, like, you know, Keldon Johnson's been giving you good minutes. Like, I don't necessarily say I trust them more than secondary pieces from Phoenix, but I trust them more than I did last year by a large amount. And if, absolutely, you know, if Jeremy Sohan was healthy, I'd be even more confident about this selection.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I mean, this, like you said, this is a different Spurs team. The best player on the court will be on the San Antonio side. But if we're assuming, like, let's say Bradley Beal can go and Yusuf Nurkic can go and this is a fully healthy...
Here's the thing, though. Phoenix. If Beal doesn't play, you know what that means, right?
What, that they get better?
Just more minutes from Tyus Jones. It's just...
More Tyus Jones. You get some Grayson Allen in there, who's been just fine.
You can very much make the case, though. Like, Beal being off the floor when you have Durant and Book is not a massive blow for them.
Yeah,
it's
for sure.
A massive blow if you want to take those guys off the court and still have a guy that can go get you a bucket anytime. But
yeah,
they have enough guys to where it'll be pretty seamless for them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I lean slightly to the Phoenix side here. But I'm not surprised if the Spurs pull this off, because, like, last season, right? And the Spurs, horrendous start, horrendous record on the season. I think it was 21 wins. They barely exceeded their franchise record for wins there. But they were 1-13 in November last year. 9-6 this year, Adam.
Like, yeah, what are they, 11 and 9 overall?
Yeah, I mean, they're tied in the standings with the Nuggets. Like, again, it's not a great team, not a contender, but I think it's fair. And again, having watched all but one of these games this season for San Antonio, I think this is a good team. Not a contending team, not a top six, a playoff team, but I think it's a good team. And I think if they have Wemby out there, they can compete with any team on any given night. So again, like I said on the Daily Dime this morning here at FTN Fantasy, this is the biggest Spurs game in like 4 years. So I'm just pumped up to have like, quote unquote, a meaningful game here in early December. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, whether you're a Spurs, a Suns fan, or you're just watching for some good basketball. I think it's going to be a fun one.
A theoretical Wemby Durant matchup is pretty fun too, because like with Wemby, there's always the conundrum of, okay, this you know, a traditional center is way too slow and not athletic, and then a small ball five is, you know, too small. Mm-hmm. But Durant, you kind of have, I mean, you have both, right? You have, you know, he's practically 7 foot, so nobody's really going to match Wemby's height, obviously, but he can, you know, keep up with him. So I think that match is pretty interesting. I'd be interested to see, I probably should have looked at this before we hopped on. I would like to see what Wemby did in those matchups against Durant last year, just out of curiosity.
Out of curiosity, I actually have those numbers right in front of me, because I went back. I remembered those were the first two wins for Wembanyama in the NBA were both against the Suns, kind of back-to-back games there in Phoenix. First game, 28 minutes. You remember they were kind of bringing him along slowly at the beginning of last year. So it was 18 points, 8 boards, and an assist. I believe that was a 1-point win. Then the next game, 34 minutes, 38 and 10, 2 assists.
Remember in DFS, we're like, you might as well just keep playing Wemby until he plays 30 minutes, because if he ever plays 34, he is going to absolutely break the slate.
Yep. And then Phoenix did take care of business in a big way. I think a 25-point win there in late March as they made their push to the playoffs in the Spurs. You know, I think it was basically just Wemby out there at that point.
Chris Paul revenge game, quietly under the radar.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I mean, one team removed, but
we're starting to get to the point too where he doesn't really count for revenge games anymore.
Yeah, it's half the league,
half the Western Conference, pretty much.
But so now that we've had this extended Spurs conversation, let me just point this out: Wemby's first 9 games this year, 20 points, 8.6 rebounds, 2 assists, 2.5 blocks, 1.1 steals. He was slashing 46, 31, 77. In the 8 games since. So we're almost at an even split, right? We got 17 games. So in the last 8 games for Wembanyama, Adam, just 31 points, 11 boards, 4.5 assists, 3.5 blocks, 1 steal, shooting 54, 43, 79 on 12 3-point attempts per game. 12, 43%. Adam, like 12.6 is, I think, LaMelo Ball shooting.
I was going to say, it's like Ant-Man LaMelo Ball usage.
So he's like, over the last 8 games, and look, I do not think he shoots low 40s on 12 threes a game over a full season, but this sample points to him being like one of the best shooters in the league.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. 12 threes a game, 43.2%.
Also,
enough is being made, because he does shit like every week that we're like, oh my God, we've never seen it before. That is maybe the most eye-popping thing we have seen him do.
Well, I think also because when you watch the threes he's taking, they're like super disrespectful.
Yeah.
Top of the arc threes.
Yeah. Dude, they pulled him. So they got last night against the Kings. Terrible first quarter. But they make a little run. They knock the ball out of bounds near midcourt with 0.9 to go. Wemby pops up off the bench. They bring him in, run him off a little pin down, catches it from 40 feet, and just shoots a jump shot. Goes off the front of the rim. Like, it wasn't a heave. It wasn't like luck. Turns around and shoots a jump shot from the logo. 43.2% on 12 attempts a game. Just like, I don't even think it can.
If we get into like mid-December and he's still low 40s on that volume, just chalk it.
Pack it up. Who wants to come win titles? Come to South Central Texas.
Trying to think of like when Chris Paul obviously is done, like who's the point guard that's going to be there? It might just be Stephon Castle, but like, yeah, I mean, if they aren't getting there already, they are going to quickly become a destination for free agents. Mm-hmm. Which is weird because San Antonio's always been this team. It's like homegrown talent. We draft everybody. They're really good Hall of Fame players. But now it's like we have a couple of those players, and now it's like who wants to come compete?
Yep.
Because they're probably going to make a play in this year at very least.
Yeah, sure. I would say right now, if I had to put money on them, yes or no, in the play-in, I would say yes.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota looks bad. Denver has concerns.
Kings look bad.
Kings look bad. Yeah.
I don't think Minnesota misses, but I just think the Spurs can be the 10. Like, yep. With what we've seen here through a month and a half almost.
It might be a little bit premature, but I think the 10 seed could be their floor at this point. Like, their ceiling is probably, like, 7.
Yeah.
But I don't see many teams that you just make the case are more of a lock to make at least the play-in than them right now.
When we haven't seen a second of Wembanyama, Castle, Vassell, Sochan together.
Yep.
Which, to me, that's their best four players. I know Chris Paul's there and Harrison Barnes and all that. But, like, to me, that young core, you want to see those guys together. And Sochan was playing so well before. We've gone fully into a Spurs podcast now. So, Adam, 43% on 12 threes a game. It's insane.
It's just, I don't know. If I can hijack the conversation, it's like watching what the Bills did yesterday when Amari Cooper flipped it to Josh Allen. You just go like this and go.
Yep.
Which, by the way, I was laughing hysterically for 40 minutes straight yesterday watching that game.
Yep, that was, I'm sure that was pretty fun for you. Bills continue their streak in the snow. Now, that was a snow game.
Obviously, like I mention all the time, I'm in the PA area. I was born upstate New York. I make it out to Buffalo for one game every year. This is the first year I haven't made it out there. And the three games in the offseason we were looking at, Chiefs, Dolphins, and then last night, Dolphins would have been the game-winning 61-yard field goal. The Chiefs obviously would have been the incredible win. And then last night would have been just an awesome snow game, which I've been to snow games, and there's nothing like it. But yeah, I wish I was there. Very, very badly.
Been a fun fall for Adam. So again, West Group B, we're waiting on Spurs, Suns, and Thunder. And then for that wild card spot, of course, all three of those teams could clinch the wild card along with the Clippers, the Blazers, the Nuggets, the Mavs, and the Grizzlies. So very excited to watch all of these Cup games on Tuesday. And I guess sandwiching those days, right, just four games on our Monday. But the game I'm eyeing tonight here, Adam, as we look ahead to the rest of the beginning of this week, Pelicans at Hawks, DeJounte Murray revenge game.
And they need him badly.
yeah, they do. I think we're getting news on the Pelicans as we're live here. So it looks like Brandon Ingram is questionable. Jordan Hawkins is out once again. Of course, Zion is still out. Herb Jones up to doubtful, though. So probably doesn't come back tonight, but on the precipice of a return. And that will be a big breath of fresh air for the Pelicans, who are 4-17, worst record in the West, and only in front of the Wizards right now.
Was it last year or the year before when they were like the best team in the West to start the season? And then injuries happened. And then it's just ever since then, it's just been like.
I think they were a game back of the Nuggets when Zion went out last year.
Yeah.
That's the reason I picked, and I know that you weren't on. Mike was on for our preseason divisional previews, but I had the Pelicans winning the Southwest Division. That's how confident I was in this roster and its depth, and it just immediately crumbles with DeJounte fracturing his hand and, of course, everything that's come after that. But I'm excited, speaking of DeJounte again, I'm excited to see him go back to the ATL tonight, see what he can do statistically. And then on Wednesday, after the group stage is over, LeBron's going back to South Beach, Lakers at Heat. That is pretty much annually just a game that I want to watch, whether it's Bron going back to Miami or Bron going back to Cleveland. I always like to tune into those.
Yeah, and not to give it away, but I will be talking about Miami in the stock up, stock down portion of the podcast.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and get to stock up, stock down to close out episode 26. We'll start with the stock downs. What do you got?
So for me, it's really cut and dry and it's simple. It's the Charlotte Hornets. LaMelo's going to miss a couple weeks with the calf. Was watching that entire game back, and Charlotte was down like 18 in the third quarter. And then LaMelo starts hitting these shots that, at this point, LaMelo and only a few other players can probably hit. These like leaning fadeaway 1 foot threes he's hitting. And they crawl all the way back. And then LaMelo hurts the calf. I think it's a calf. Very late in that game, and now he's going to miss a couple weeks. And it just, it sucks. Like, LaMelo was having a career season over 30 points per game. Just amazing. One of the best players in the league this year, bar none. And now you're relying on more from Brandon Miller, obviously, but his job becomes a lot more difficult. And then now you have, you know, Micić you have to rely on a ton. It's just, not that Charlotte was a team we expected to really make a push for anything, but it's just like, it's stock down for Charlotte and the NBA as a whole, because LaMelo was, I don't think there have been seven players more fun to watch this season than LaMelo Ball. So it sucks, and Charlotte's probably going to score a lot of games where they have 91 points going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I'm glad you brought that up, because you know how much I love LaMelo, and I think I would certainly hear arguments on the effectiveness of his play, but there is zero argument to be had in terms of the watchability.
Dude, I'm rewatching that Miami game, and he's pulling from Wemby range, like off 1 foot. I'm like, it's probably insane. Should be taking that shot, but
you talk about disrespectful shots.
Yeah, yeah. Like there's these plays where, like, I think it's like Brandon Miller or Josh Green. They're like kicking it out to LaMelo at the top of the key, and he like sells with a hard pump fake. And you would think, okay, just drive to the basket or pull up a little bit closer. Nope. Just pump fakes, lets the defender fly by, and still pulls off 1 foot from like 38 feet. Just like, but yeah, I think Brandon Miller is going to have these huge games, but the efficiency is going to be a concern without LaMelo there. Obviously, like there's five-man lineups right now where it's like LaMelo, Miller, then it's like Micić, Josh Green. Like, it's rough. So, tough spot for Charlotte.
We've had multiple Taj Gibson starts.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the Hornets are. Nick Richards just came back. Mark Williams should be back. He's on the mend. But LaMelo going out, right? That's the engine of all this. And like you said, Miles Bridges has been out too. So, five straight losses for the Hornets. And not that big of a losing streak for my stock down here on episode 26, but it's the Kings for me.
Yep.
9-12. You know, there's been some heroics from De'Aaron Fox when they've been shorthanded, but concerns that I had coming into the year, adding DeMar DeRozan to this team has really hurt their spacing. It's really hurt their offense. This is a team that formerly with Mike Brown had been tops or top three in the league pretty consistently in terms of three-pointers attempted, right? The pace and space of the Kings was a big factor in kind of their resurgence over the last couple of years. And now I believe they're first in mid-range attempts. And that's the DeMar DeRozan effect. And there's plenty
and
of
Fox.
Positives that – yeah, yeah. Well, and there's plenty of positives that DeMar DeRozan still brings to a team. But, like, it has grinded their offense not to a halt, but to a place where they are 9-12. They are 2.5 games back of the 10 seed right now. Losers of two straight, 3-7 over their last 10. It's a stock down right now for the Kings. And, Adam, I'm not sure how they turn this around.
We talked whenever we talked hoops last year, when the Kings were on a slate, and I was in love with their offense because obviously Mike Brown, before or after he was with Cleveland, he joins Golden State as an assistant for those years, and he's in that offense where it's just movement, movement, movement. And then they kind of brought that right to Sacramento with Sabonis being the hub. He's at the free throw line, and there's just movement all around him. And that's – there's way less space when you have DeMar DeRozan who wants to go to the mid-range where Sabonis is setting up and Fox wants to cut to the basket or be in the mid-range. You're going to have games where those guys are just going to get buckets because they're still really good. But, yeah, I mean, the spacing is a concern. I think I saw what Monk is going to be in the starting lineup going forward, which can help with that. He's definitely one of the best, well, I guess for the time being he won't be, but usually one of the best six men in the NBA. But that spacing needs to improve for them to be towards the elite offense they were last season, and right now it's just not there. Also, real quick before we go to stock up, who do you think's the best team, the second best team in the West? I think it might be Memphis.
Yeah, well, that's kind of it. I don't know. Again, I think you've done a podcast a time or two because my stock up I wrote staying afloat, but that is two teams, one in each conference. One, the Magic, who we've talked about.
Also, I did not look at the show sheet, so that's just
okay. Well, there you go. So, like, no Paolo Banchero. We talked about it already. Magic on a 6-game win streak, third seed out east without Paolo. Like, that is an overwhelming success for what our expectations.
I mean, what if they went 500? We would have been like, cool, that's good.
That's we'd have been like, that's good. Yeah. And so, but very similar story for Memphis here in the West, 14-7, winners of 6 straight, getting healthy, but still not all the way there, right? You're missing Zach Edey. You still have not seen G.G. Jackson. Vince Williams is back out. Ja Morant has been in and out. Marcus Smart has been in and out, right? The list goes on and on. But 14-7, a game and a half back of OKC for the one seed out West. I mean, plus 8.8 point differential. Like, that is right up there in the top tier across the league. So Taylor Jenkins, gotta be one of the favorites for coach of the year at this point, right up there. I would put him up there with Kenny Atkinson right now. I think stock up, staying afloat, and the Grizzlies are the shiny example of that right now.
I was insanely high on Memphis in the offseason with only one concern, and the concern was what would the fit be with Zach Edey and Ja Morant, and when we've seen them together, there's been no issues at all. And then you had the fact that Triple J has been awesome, and he's once again a DPOY candidate. Mm-hmm. Scottie Pippen Jr. has been awesome.
Yep.
The players you mentioned that they will get back. Like, all of a sudden, we were worried about some of the depth they might not have had, but it's like all these young guys that aren't in, like, the core 5 or 6 are really good players.
Jalen Wells has been starting.
Dude, I think they're the second best team in the West. And like if you give me every team at full strength, I'm taking them over everybody outside of OKC.
Yeah, I think that's fair. 39th overall pick, Jalen Wells, 16 games started this year, shooting 46, 40, 77, 12 points per game. In the Grizzlies organization, just what they're a model franchise at this point in my eyes, in terms of how to build a small market team.
Yep.
What's your stock up here on episode 26?
I'll close it out quickly with two players that I wanted to highlight. The first is Isaiah Hartenstein. Finally starting consistently for the Thunder after, you know, using that small ball lineup right after Chet went down. He has looked awesome, and I think it's 4 starts this season, averaging 32 minutes per game, just under 16 points, under 14 rebounds, 4 assists, a block per game. He has always been one of the best facilitating centers in the league. I forget which game it was I was watching back. There was a play where Hartenstein had the ball in the low post, threw a behind-the-back pass. I think it was Cason Wallace. Somebody else. I don't think it was Cason Wallace. It was somebody. I can't remember. The layup was, like, contested, partially blocked. And then it goes back to Hartenstein, who proceeds to drive to the basket, jump for a layup, and then last second throw the ball behind his back, again to the same player who bricks the layup. But he has been awesome for them. There was a play in that same game. I'm trying to remember who they played in that game. It's really bothering me. There was a lob attempt against him. He recovered and blocked it at the rim. Like, he is doing everything for them, and it's obviously needed. What's up?
Was it against Golden State?
It was not against Golden State. I know that. I'll go back and find it. But it was, he's been awesome. And obviously the small ball lineups have worked for this team, but you still need somebody with size and ability with, you know, in the absence of Chet. And the more I think about it, he is the perfect player for this team with his ability to, A, shoot that little float shot that he's patented. B, what do you have around him? You have an elite three-point shooting team and a team with two elite slashers with SGA and Jalen Williams, and he's great at passing in both scenarios. So I love Isaiah Hartenstein. And then on the Eastern Conference side, Tyler Hero. Watching a lot of the Heat games back, they're pretty much running their offense right now. That's why you see a lot of these quiet games from Jimmy Butler, where Bam gets a defensive rebound, brings the ball up, or they're running sets where Bam's at the top of the three-point line, top of the arc. Tyler Hero, it's pretty much like the Sabonis, De'Aaron Fox type stuff from last year, where Tyler Hero's running around him, and just the defenders have no clue if he's going to go all the way around Bam and get the handoff. There's times where Tyler Hero, Brandon Miller was in absolute hell trying to guard him, where he would sell like he was going all the way around Bam and then do a spin move, and he has a wide open three, and all Bam has to do is hand it off. that duo has been awesome. Miami's been playing a little bit better lately too, which is great because they need more consistency in their half-court offense. So Tyler Hero slash Bam and then Hartenstein in the West. They've been catching my eye lately as I've been watching more of these games.
I like it. Really good calls there. I am very interested to see how Coach Dagnall makes it work with Chet and Hartenstein both healthy. Hopefully we get to that point.
And it's like, that's not a pairing where you just can't play them together either. So that they're going to go on a stretch to soon where I think it's like, oh my God, OKC is like 31-10. It's like, okay.
Yeah. But maybe even better, right? Because Alex Caruso has been mostly out for this season as well. So that's an episode 26. Appreciate you all tuning in, sticking with us. Adam and I will be back on Thursday. Of course, we will have all 8 knockout teams set to go, and we will go through our quarter season awards. Excited for that. Enjoy the beginning of your week, everybody. We will do the same. We'll see you back here on Thursday. Till then, he's Adam, and I'm Zach. Goodbye. Thank you.